Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Ayin Dalet Amud Bet, 8 lines from the bottom. Ibayiluhu. With regards to this, Malvim Notbo Rishon Visheni. What is the din with regards to counting 1 and 2, but this is with regards to levels of Tuma, the fetus that is found inside of the mother, how distinct is that fetus from the mother itself? Do we view them as a single entity? And therefore, if there's Tuma for the mother, then the fetus is at the same state of Tuma. Or do we say that the fetus considered to be a separate entity, and therefore it drops down a level of tuma between the mother and the fetus? Which fetus we're speaking about in of itself is a good question. Rashi over here says, ubentet chai shibibitna. It's speaking about, according to Rashi, a case where you have a bentet, went to full term, chai, that is alive. From Rashi, the implications are that if it was anything less than 9 months, or it was mate, whether it was 9 months or less, that automatically would have been considered as an extension of the mother, because there, the entity doesn't really have any independence. It's really a yerechimo in that situation. That's why it's nitar, especially when it's mate. Whereas when it's ben tishachai, it does have a separate existence, especially according to Rabbi Meir, who thinks that it needs separate shchita. So Rashi specifies that the problem or the question revolves around a ben tet chai. You could see differentiating between chai and mate, even with less term, but chai versus mate, where you could see differentiating. Or you could see this question being relevant in all the situations, and the Rishonim posit all those different possibilities, but it's clear Rashi thinks, speaking about a bentet chai, in the sheet of the Chachamim, so Rabbi Yochanan Amar, monim bo Rishon v'sheni, Rabbi Yochanan sees them as being separate entities, and you count Rishon and Sheni, Rabbi Shimon Lakish Omer, in monim bo Rishon v'sheni. Reish Lakish believes that you don't count Rishon v'sheni, Naseke goes, hamit kashkesh beklipato. It's the equivalent of a nut inside of its shell. We don't view the shell and the nut as being separate entities. We view them being a single entity. That the shell is a shomer. It's a protective layer over the nut that's inside. And so too here, we view the mother as being a protective layer over the fetus. Eight feirish lakish Rabbi Yochanan. Habasar maga nevela divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir, we discussed before, says that with regards to a limb that left the mother, that limb which is asur ba'achila, because it's basar basadeh trefa lo tochelu, that problem cannot be solved by shechita, and therefore the arm is now a din of Eivir Min HaChai, or real nevela, depending if you hold like Rabba or Rav Chisda, but either way there's a tumat nevela here that affects the residual animal, because it's in touch with the animal. Chamim on the other hand say the shchita is successful at removing the shame nevela from it, but it is a magat shreifa, which we saw on Ayin Gimel, is a reference to the tumat rabbanan by muktashim. So bishlam adidi da minat chad gufo. According to me, who I say it's one entity, I know did kasher bidama de ime. Then I understand how there was hechsher the kabul tumah over here. The transference of Tuma, or the problem of Tuma, can originate from two different problems. There can be inherent Tuma, like Tumat Nevela, Tumat Eivir Min HaChai. That doesn't require any hechsher, it doesn't require any priming in order for the Tuma to exist, or to devolve upon the item, because it's inherent to the item. There's a different type of Tuma, which is like Tumat Ochlim. Tumat Ochlim means that the item has the ability to accept Tuma, to have Tuma transferred to it. It has no inherent Tuma. But that needs something called hefshir the kabul tumah when it is ochlim. It needs priming before it can accept tumah. It basically has to get a shame ochel associated with it. And the shame ochel, according to the Torah, is only if it's washed with one of the seven liquids that the Torah specifies as being equivalent to mayim. So over here, you have the fetus, which is ochel, because it's going to be eaten. There was a shechita over here that was matirit to be eaten. So you have ochel. So now ochel requires priming, requires hechsher, the kabul tumah, in order to accept tumah. Where was their hechsher tumah? What liquid came over this item? If you say that the fetus is an extension of the mother, then you can argue that liquids that made the mother mukshar, the kabul tumah, will also affect the fetus, which is the fact that they have dam from the shechita that we discussed earlier in the Masechta, back on Daf Lamed Bet, Lamed Gimel, about the fact that dam shechita is makshir, the animal, the kabul tumah. So, according to me, Reish Lakish says that I see it as an extension of the mother, then the dam of the mother that was makshir the mother is also makshir the fetus, because the fetus is just an extension of the mother. According to you, what provided the hechsher, what provided the priming over here? Amalei b'shchita. It was the shchita itself that did it. Uki Rabbi Shimon. Back on Daf Lamed Gimel, we saw Rabbi Shimon says even in a dry shchita, there's hukshah lekabel tumah because the ikar shchita itself, the fact that it is a matir and that it takes away the shame nevela from the animal, that in itself creates a priming, even though you don't have any liquids there. Rabbi Yochanan says, I'll just say it in the shita of Rabbi Shimon. So eitve Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, avar benar. If you went through a river, hukshar, then the animal becomes mukshah lekabel tumah. Halach the beit hakverot. If afterwards then you go to the cemetery, nitma, then it becomes tameh. So here you're speaking about a ben pakua, fetus that was found live in the mother, and then it's walking around. And now you take it through a river. So the way the Braita expresses it is that that is huksha lekabel tumah, that primed it to accept tumah. And then afterwards it goes into beit hakverot, it can accept tumah. So Rabbi Yochanan says to Reish Lakish, for me, that makes sense, because Bishmavdi Damina Trey Gufe Ninu, I would say that they are two entities, Shemachi Ukshar, in Lo Ukshar Lo. That's why it needs a separate Heksha the Kabul Tumah. It needs its own priming in order to be Mekabul Tumah. But according to you, Aladidak, Damar Tchad Gufahu, Hait Kashir Bedamadi Yimei. Why isn't it already Heksha the Kabul Tumah from the blood of the mother's Chita? You don't need to go through the Nar. You can walk straight into the Beit HaKvarot and it'll be Tameh. So the Gemara answers on behalf of Reish Lakish, b'shchita yaveshta. It was a dry shchita, uke delok Rabbi Shimon, and not like Rabbi Shimon. I mean, a dry shchita where there is no liquid, and not like Rabbi Shimon says, the shchita in of itself is the makshir. And so here he had no heksher, the kabel tumah, he day the mother. So since there's no heksher, day the mother, the fetus, now which is a live entity, a ben pakua, requires heksher, the kabel tumah, separately. So, mantano avar benahar, uksar. Who is the Tano of this Braita that says, Avar Benar Hukshar, that if you go through the Nahar, it becomes Mukshar the Kabul Tumah, Halak the Beit HaKvarot Nitma, and if you take it to the cemetery, it becomes Tameh. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yossi HaGlilihi. It is authored by Rabbi Yossi HaGlili. We'll see in a second in Rashi why it's important that Rabbi Yochanan says that it is Rabbi Yossi HaGlili. The Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer Mishum Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, Mitameh Tumat Uchlim, Vitzarich Echsher, that when it comes to a ben pakua, even if it's alive, if it touches tuma, it can become tameh, but it does require Echsher. Chamim omrim, enu mitameh tuma tochlim mipnei shuchai. It's very simple. You can't have tuma with an animal that is alive. Animals are not mekabel tuma unless they are dead. That is true of any entity except human beings. Human beings can accept tuma even when they're alive. They become tameim when they're alive. But any other entity, while it's alive, while it's attached to the ground, is not mekabel tumah. If they say, you have a ben pakua walking around, it can't be mekabel tumah. And by definition, if you are alive, you can't be mitameh tumat ochlim. V'azer Rabbi Yochanan etameh, and this is Rabbi Yochanan the shitato, dama Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, ubeit shamai amru davar achad. Rabbi Yossi Aglili and beit shamai are of the same opinion. Rabbi Yossi HaGlili Hadamran. Rabbi Yossi HaGlili over here is what we said. Beit Shammai is because the Tanan. We have a Mishnah in Uksin. Dagim Meimetai Mekabelim Tuma. What is the threshold? At which point is it that Dagim, fish, are Mekabel Tuma? Beit Shammai Omrim Mishyitzodu. Beit Shammai says as soon as you trap them, as soon as you have them at the point where they are now not free to leave you and you have them trapped, they can be Mekabel Tuma then. Beit Hillel Omrim Mishyamutu. Once they die, once the fish are dead, then they're mekabel tumah. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Misha she'en yecholim lachiyot. From the point at which they can no longer live. So now you have three opinions in the Mishnah by Dagim. By the Mishnah of Dagim, you have Beit Shammai who says at the moment they're captured already, they have a din of being as if dead. Since they have a as if dead titling, then they can make mekabel tumah, even though they're alive. Beit Hillel says they need to be dead in order to be mekabel tumah. So when they're dead, that's when they're mekabel tumah. Rabbi Kiva seemingly has an in-between position, which is once they crest over the threshold where they can no longer live, if you threw them back in the water, they wouldn't survive. But at this point, they still have some life in them. That's the threshold according to Rabbi Kiva. What you see from Beit Shammai is that even an item that is still alive can be mekabel tumah because you've captured them already. You've already brought the nets in. You brought them on the hook. The fish is still alive, but that's enough already to determine as if it is dead, and therefore it's mekabel tumah. Similarly, Rabbi Yossi Aglili just before told us, then a ben pakua walking around can't be mekabel tumah. Even though it's alive, it can't be mekabel tumah. So that's what Rabbi Yochanan is saying, l'shitatei, that Rabbi Yossi Aglili and Beit Shammai have the same opinion. Their opinion is that when something is alive, it can still be mekabel tumah, which is a pretty big chiddush that things that are alive can be mekabel tumah. Meaning just like by the ben pakua, the reason that it's considered as if dead is because the shechita of the mother is materit ba'achila. So we see the shechita's mother looking as if shechted and ra'oi la'achila. That's why it can be kabod mot ochlim. So too by fish, there's no requirement of shechita. The only requirement by fish is asifa, which is what we learned earlier in the Masechta, that the comparison in Parshat Balotcha, where when Moshe says, if I had all the tzon in the world and I shechted for them, would I have enough? And then he says, had I gathered all the fish of the sea, would I have enough to feed them? The Gemara sees in that a parallel between shechita and asifa, that the asifa, the fish, is equivalent to the shechita of the animal. So over here, that's what Beit Shammai is saying. You remember, asif the fish, that's already enough to consider it as if shechted, meaning that it's ra'ui la'achila for you. And therefore, it's deemed to be an ochel already. And if that's the case, even when it's alive, it can be mekabel tumah. The chiddush in Rabbi Yochanan is that he says the author of that braita is Rabbi Yossi Aglili, and not the chachamim of our Mishnah. That's what Rashi notes over here. That's the big chiddush in Rabbi Yochanan. And that's why the Gemara says that it's Rabbi Yochanan the Tameh. Rabbi Yochanan Tameh says that Rabbi Yossi Aglili holds like Beit Shammai. And since he holds like Beit Shammai, you see here that the whole reasoning for his position is that because even though the animal's alive, it can't be mekabel tumah. Because even the Rabbanan over here, who are arguing on Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, bringing in the name of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, they agree with the Rabbanan in our Mishnah that the shechita of the mother is sufficient for the fetus. So you could have argued that the opinions here parallel the machloket that we have in our Mishnah. The machloket in our Mishnah is the mother's shechita sufficient to be matir the fetus. The Chachamim say yes, when a ben tishachai. Rabbi Meir says, by ben tishachai, it's too much of an independent entity that the mother's shechita does nothing over here. So you could have thought that Rabbi Yossi Aglili and the Chachamim are arguing on that same point. Rabbi Yossi Aglili is told like the Chachamim of our Mishnah, that shechita of the mother is what's matir the fetus, and therefore it's as if shechted. The Chachamim that disagree and say that's not the case, they could be holding like Rabbi Meir, who says that shechita of the mother for Ben Tishachai is not effective, and that's why it's not mekabel tumat ochlin. That's what you could have thought. That's what Rabbi Yochanan is coming to dispel. He's coming to dispel the fact that you would think their machloket is related to Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim of our Mishnah. Rather, he says both Rabbi Yossi Aglili and the Chachamim over here subscribe to the Chachamim of our Mishnah, which means that shechita of the mother is effective at being matir the fetus for achila. But nevertheless, shmamina rabbonon de mitahari v'ben pekua lav neshum desvirle de ton shechita Rabbi Meir. The reason the Chachamim over here is not because they hold like Rabbi Meir and they need shechita, because otherwise they should have been able to agree with Beit Shammai as well. That's the point here. Rabbi Yochanan the Shittatei says that Rabbi Yossi Aglili and Beit Shammai have the same opinion. If it was that the whole issue was the machloket Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim as to whether Shechita is effective or not, then everybody should agree to Beit Shammai's position. They only argue here because of the Shechita issue. But by fish that don't require Shechita, they should have agreed. The fact that Rabbi Yochanan says that Rabbi Yossi Aglili's position is the only one that matches up with Beit Shammai means that the Chachamim disagree, even by the case of fish. The reason they disagree by the fish is because they believe that anything alive can't be mekabel tumah. And similarly over here, even though the ben pakua is nitari the shechita of the mother, it's still a live entity. And if it's a live entity, it can't be mekabel tumah. So that's where Rabbi Yochanan's chiddush is over here. The braita is authored by Rabbi Yossi Aglili, and the Rabbi Yossi Aglili and the Chachamim in that braita don't have the same machloket as Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim in our Mishnah, but everyone holds like the Chachamim. And their machloket is a separate issue as to whether a live entity can be mekabel tumah or cannot be mekabel tumah. Now the Gemara says, my beinayu, what is the nafkamina between them? The way that it seems from Rashi, and it's much more clear inside of the Rabbeinu Gershom, that the my beinayu over here is a reference to what's the nafkamina between Beit Hillel and Rabbi Akiva. When Rabbi Hillel says Mishya Mutu, and Rabbi Akiva says Misha Sheinu Yochlim Lachyot, what is the difference between them? And the Gemara answers about that on Rabbi Yochanan, Dag Mikarta Ika Beinayu. And Raz Rashi says, Mikarta is Mifarper. It's a dog that's flipping around and moving around. So it shows signs of life, but it already has crossed over the threshold where if you throw it back in the water, it's not going to survive. The Gemara in Shabbat gives that threshold as being if a part of the fish in the area of the fins dries up the size of a sella, then that already is a fish that will not recover or not survive if you throw it back in the water. So that's the threshold for Rabbi Akiva. So even though it's flipping around and showing signs of life, Rabbi Akiva, it's already able to be deemed as dead and mekabel tumah. For Beit Hillel, it needs to be absolutely still, meaning dead is dead, in order for it to be mekabel tumah. That's the way the Rabbeinu Gershom, and seemingly that's the way Rashi reads the Gemara over here. The Baal Tosafot disagree and say that's pashut. It's very simple to know what the nafkamina is between Rabbi Akiva and Beit Hillel. Rabbi Akiva says when it's deemed dead, and Beit Hillel says when it is dead. So whatever is in between those two stages, that's easy to understand that that's the nafkamina between them. Rather, the Baal Tosafot see this as being a nafkamina Beit Shammai to Rabbi Akiva. What is the nafkamina between Rabbi Akiva and Beit Shammai? And then he explains that mekarta doesn't mean like Rashi mifarper, like flopping around, but rather shekofetz umidaleg bechozek. It's a case where it's jumping around with real strength and vigor. And that's the difference between them. Because according to Beit Shammai, it's already tamei. Yes, you trapped it. Yes, you brought it in. But the thing is fully alive. And if you threw it back in the water, this fish would still survive. When you bring it in on the hook, this fish is dancing around. If you put it back in the water, it would survive. That, according to Beit Shammai, is mekabel tumah. But according to Rabbi Akiva, would not be mekabel tumah. It's only after you reach the point for Rabbi Akiva that returning to the water would not be efficacious, that's when he considers it or deems it as dead. So even though Beit Shammai has a point of deemed death, and so does Rabbi Akiva, there is a difference between them. The deemed death of Beit Shammai is when it's in full force and vigor, it's still considered or deemed to be dead. Rabbi Akiva is deemed dead is only once it reaches the point where it's in an intractable or irreversible death point, which is that it will not survive if you throw it back in the water. And the meaning of mekarta is not just mifarper, where the fish is slipping around after it's already dead, but rather, as the Tosafot says, mekarta l'shon koach b'chiyut gadol, when it has strength and full-fledged life force in it. And that's what he brings in the name of the Aruch. Therefore he explains the Mabinayu here as being as what the nafkamina between Beit Shammai and Rabbi Akiva is. Bayi Rav Chista. Chista now poses the following question. Nodo b'dagim simanei treifa mau. If the dagim have in them simanei treifa, what is the din? Rashi over here says, le Rabbi Akiva. This is according to the sheet of Rabbi Akiva, that if fish is deemed dead, then what's the story with treifot? Because if you tell me you can reach a threshold of deemed dead, then maybe treifa also should have a meaning of deemed dead. If that's the case, then according to Rabbi Akiva, maybe the fish should be already considered oklim from a much earlier stage if we have simanei treifa in it. That's the way Rashi learns. You could have learned the question as being a broader question about whether the fish is considered to be mate when it is a treifa, and maybe even according to Beit Hillel. Rashi terms it as being specifically directed at Rabbi Akiva's position. Question exists both according to one who says a treifa can live, meaning that it's not fatal to the animal, as well as according to one that says that treifa is a limited lifespan for the animal. According to one who says that treifa can live for a long time, even though we saw the Rishonim mean saying that even if it lives for 2-3 years, it's a downward spiral for it. It's not going to be healthy and in full vigor. Nevertheless, it will live for a long time. So, Behema, he, the Nefisha Chiyuta, by an animal which has a lot of life force, about the game, the Lo Nefisha Chiyutayu, but fish that don't have a lot of life force, lo, that would not be the case. Generally, when we say Trefa Chaya, Trefa Enachaya, the meaning is, will the animal survive this problem, or will it not survive this problem? Over here, the Gemara is taking Trefa Chaya, Trefa Enachaya much more literally, which is Trefa Chaya, is it considered to be alive? Or Trefa Enachaya, is it not considered to be alive? And the Gemara says, even according to one says that Trefa is considered to be alive, maybe that's only by an animal which has a lot of vigor and a lot of strength in it where it can overcome or push through the Trefa. But by fish, that they themselves have very little that keeps them alive, quote unquote, because as soon as you remove them from the water, they don't have a high survival rate. Maybe also when they get a treifa, they also wouldn't have a high survival rate. And it is if they are dead already. Oh, Dilma, afilum on the mar trefa ain't a chaya. Even according to one who says the trefa does not survive. That's only true by an animal where in its species you have shchita. No. But maybe by fish that don't have dinim shchita, that would not be the case. Animals that require shchita also have a world of trefot that are associated with them. Because the trefot deem the shchita no longer as a valid shchita, and that means that we're going to deem them as if they're dead right now. So that world of trefot is impactful with regards to behemoth. And that's why we say trefa in a chayo. Now then, fish, that in their world, shchita is not a relevant threshold, then so too, trefot are not going to be a relevant threshold for fish. If you take it more literally, as Rashi says over here, what does that mean? Avil tagim ein biminam. The ein biminam trefot, lo avi trefot, the gabayu kimita. And then you can see that Girsa, actually in the Shita Mikubetzet, Odalef, where he says, hanimila beima deish bimina trefot. But in fish, where trefot aren't relevant at all, then dead means it's got to be dead, and therefore trefa, which is a deemed death, is not going to be sufficient. Gemara leaves that as a teiku, as an unresolved issue, as to whether the trefot are impactful with regards to fish, and that would be, I guess, on both levels, which is, according to the way that Rashi and the Shita Mikubetzet has the Girsa, is there a world of trefot in fish at all? According to the other way we're learning it, is trefa considered to be dead by a fish, or is trefa just not a relevant threshold by fish? Hitila nefel. If the mother miscarried, she had a miscarriage, and then the fetus was delivered, but obviously over here, the fetus itself is not going to be nitar ayidei the mother, because it came out as a miscarriage, and the mother is still alive now. So there's no shechita here, and you have an animal or a fetus which is otherwise going to be classified as a nevela, because it just came out, an animal from the mother. Rabbi Yochanan amar, chelbok chelib beima. Rabbi Yochanan says that the chelib of such a fetus has the status of chelib of any kosher animal. Which is any kosher animal, the chelib is a sur to be eaten out chelib. So it has chelib like any other animal. It has chelib like a chaya. The chelib of a chaya is mutar to eat out chelib, but it would be a sur to eat if the chaya was an avela. So if you have a kosher animal that dies, the kosher animal that dies, the basar, the animal itself, is an avela. The chelev is already a sur before the isur of nevela comes, and it's also because of chelev, not because of nevela. On the other hand, when the chaya dies, it becomes a nevela, and so does its chelev become nevela, or tamtameh tamat nevela, because its chelev was same as its basar. You could eat the chelev just like you could eat the basar. That's the difference between a chaya and a behema. This fetus, Rabbi Yochanan argues, is like a behema. It came from an animal. It has the same status as an animal. Animal's chelev is problematic. If animal's chelev is problematic, then the basar has a din of nevela, but the chelev has a din of chelev, which is it's asur mishum chelev, not mishum nevela. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon Lokesh says, this fetus, when it was in utero, we considered to be an extension of the mother. And had you shechted the mother with the fetus inside, the fetus in its entirety would be mutar. Like Rabbi Yehuda of our Mishnah, who says that when you shech the mother, not only is the basar mutar, but even the chelev of the fetus is mutar because it is considered to be babahema. It's inside the mother. And since it's inside the mother, it gets or garners the status of basar all around. If that's the case, then it is mutar biachila mitzad chelev, but here it'll be asur because it's a nevela, because it was a miscarriage and there was nothing to be matirit. And the Gemara explains their position. Rabbi Yochanan amar chelbok chelev beima. The chelev is like that of a chelev of a beima, because avira gorim, that as soon as the fetus is miscarried, its exposure in of itself makes it into a beima. It's no longer internal to the mother. Shem alokish amar chelbok chelev chaya chadashim garmet. No, it's only a term that makes it that it is now considered to be an independent entity. It was miscarried before it reached full term. It doesn't gain any independence. Igedamre, there's some that say, everybody agrees if it doesn't reach full term, then it's not classified as an independent entity. And even Rabbi Yochanan would agree the chelev at that point doesn't have a separate status. But rather, the question is about sticking your hand into the mother when the fetus has reached full term and you cut out some chelev from this fetus, and then you eat it. What is the status of that item that you are eating? Is it classified as chalev, or is it not classified as chalev, that which you're eating? So now, Rabbi Yochanan Amar chalev k'chalev beima, it has a din like chalev of a beima, kadashim garme. The full term is enough to deem it as a separate entity, and therefore, the chalev that you're taking out is chalev of a beima. Now, even though he agrees that, if according to Rabbi Yehuda, if you shechted it, that the chalev would be nitar, ayudei the shechita of the mother, that's because of the gzeirah takatuv mikol beheima. Anything inside the behemah is nitar. But that doesn't change the fact that before that point of shechita of the mother, that which is inside there is considered to be chalev of a behemah. Shemalakish amar chalbo kechalev chaya. Kodashim ve'avira garme. It's not enough that the entity reached full term inside the mother. It needs to be born in order for it to be deemed a separate entity. Until it's born, it will not be classified as a separate entity. And therefore, the chalev that you cut out from this bented chai inside of the mother will be considered not chalev, but rather just like regular nevela or aver minachai in this situation. So that's the machloke between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, is what's the trigger to change the status of this animal from being in a yerechimo into an independent beima? The Rabbi Yochanan says it's term. If you reach the 9 months, that's enough to make it into an independent beima, and therefore the chalev be asur. If it remains inside the mother, yes, there's a gzeirat hakatuv that the shechita of the mother is matir the chalev. On the other hand, for Reish Lakish, you need both. You need both term, and you need it to actually be born. If it's not born, it's not going to be classified as a beima. It will retain its status as being yerachimo, and therefore the chalev does not gain independence. Now, Eifei Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Shimon Lakish, Ma chalev u'shtei klayot amurot basham, motzi michlau shaliho, af kol motzi michlau shaliho. Just like by the Hasham, that those fats go on Mizbeach and not that of a Shaliyo, that is extended or extrapolated to all Korbanot. So now, the question from Hasham is, that in Torah Kohanim, the Midrash Halacha of Vayikra, it says, by the Shlamim, it's kol ha-chelev asher al ha-kerev. All the fats that are on the internal part of the animal, all of those belong on the Mizbeach, and you cannot eat them. The Gemara learns from that, it's kol ha-chelev asher al-kerev, v'lo et ha-shaliyo, and not a fetus. So the exclusion of the chalev from being a part and parcel of the chalev of the shlamim that goes on the mizbeach, you were removed it because you have a miut. It says a chalev asher al kerev, and the Gemara dashes that chalev and not that which is of a shalil. So you would think possibly that would mean that it's not a sur for you to eat it, but it still has a mitzvah for you to put it on the mizbeach. Shomer chalev u'shtei klayot v'asham. So then, by the Hashem, where it tells you that which you put on the Mizbeach is chelev and shtei akayot, shein tam lomar, you don't need me to tell me that. So, not everything in the Shlomim world requires the tail fats to be put on the Mizbeach, yet they still require the chelev and the shtei akayot, concerning Hashem, that always has tail fats, because it's always brought from an ayo, and since it's always brought from an ayo, there is tail fats associated with it, certainly the shtei akayot should have gone onto the Mizbeach. So then why did the Torah mention the shtei klayot by the Hasham? Extraneous information. That comes to teach you motzi midei shalil, to tell you that a shalil's fats don't need to go on the mizbeach. You have two stages in the drasha. The first stage in the drasha is to say that chalev is not a sur b'achila. And the second stage comes to teach you that you don't have any mitzvah to put it on the mizbeach. So from the shlamim you know that it's not a sur, because it's not one of the fats that's required to go on the mizbeach. Therefore, it's not asur. And then the second stage is by the Hasham. Now that I know it's asur, I also now know that it doesn't have to go on the Mizbeach, because I've been mute by the Hasham as well. Because the Hasham tells me about fats that I don't need to know, because I already know them from the Shlamim. It's a Kal v'chomer from the Shlamim. If by the Shlamim, where the tail fats don't exist in some of the animals, they still have to put on the shtei klayot, and certainly by the Hasham, where the tail fats exist in all the korbanot, I would have to put the fats of the shtei klayot of the kidneys on the Mizbeach. The fact that it mentions it anyway comes to be, make a diuk or a miut, to tell you that is true by the shtei klayot, it's not true by a shalil. And the reason you exclude a shalil by a sham is because a sham only can be a male korban. So there's no way for there to be a shalil in the korban. And that's why we say that it's excluded from the shtei klayot, or the fats that are mentioned by the asham. So that's very rational, and then we extrapolate from a sham to all other korbanot that the fats of the shalil are not classified both as being asur, as well as they do not have any requirements to be put on the Mizbeach. Tosafot doesn't love that explanation of having the two stages, because he points out that how can you say lo yei be'onish ba'zara v'yei ba'mod ba'akreiv? How can you think from the limud by Shlomim that you wouldn't have any isur of eating the chelev, but you still have to put on mizbeach? The pasuk that you're quoting about the fats by Shlomim is not a pasuk about what fats are asur to eat. It's a pasuk about what fats from the Shlomim have to go on the mizbeach. So how could you ever have a possible explanation that, oh, all the pasuk's telling you is don't eat those fats, but maybe you do have to put them on the mizbeach? The pasuk speaks about what you put on the mizbeach, and it's memayish talil from that. It sounds like that's not what you put on the mizbeach. So Tosfa explains it slightly differently and says that not because of the pasuk by Shlomim, there's no restriction against those fats, but rather from kol babehema, the pasuk that we've been using all along as to why the mother is matir the fetus, that's the source for the fact that the fats of a shalil inside of a shlamim are not a sur, not because of the shlamim itself, it's because of the limud that we have mikol bebehema. Then maybe we would say mikol bebehema tells you that there is no restriction, but you still would have to put on his back. That's what the Hasham comes to dispel. So that's how Tosfos gets out of the problem of explaining the two stages by saying that source for the first stage is not the Korban Shlamim or the Psukim by the Korban Shlamim, rather from the Psukim that we have by Mikol Bebeima, ending side of the mother is considered to be Heter Hayidei the mother, and therefore doesn't have a status of fats. This is a question for Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, and therefore he says, Bishlam Yididi, Rabbi Yochanan says, according to me, I know the Yitzchik Kra, the Imute. That's why you need a post to tell you that the fats, they don't go on them as Beach, because according to me, this is real chalif. And so you need a specific pasuk to tell you, don't put it on the mizbeach. It's not under the restriction of regular chalif, and don't put it on the mizbeach, even though you should have done it because it's classified as chalif b'ema. Elidach amai yitzrich. According to you, why do you have to actually exclude it? According to you, it's not called chalif. It's not called chalif. Why do you have to tell me, don't put it on the mizbeach? You wouldn't have put it on the mizbeach anyway. I'm late. Time to didi. Now me meocha. Reish Lakish says, that's my source. The fact that the Torah over here says that you don't have to put on mizbeach, and there is no restriction, that's my source for the fact that this isn't classified as chalif. The fact that the Torah tells you that shows you, demonstrates to you that it's not chalif. It's not because it's not chalif, therefore this is the din over here. No, this din tells you that it's not called chalif. That's my source. V'igidamre, and some say that the question was posed the other way around. Either Rabbi Shimon Lakish or Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Shlakish posed this as a question of Rabbi Yochanan. Ma chelav shtek layotum Rabbi Hashem motzi michlau shalil, af kol motzi michlau shalil. Just like we did the limud before by the Hasham, that it's extended or extrapolated to all korbanot, that those fats go on mizbeach and not that of a shalil. Bishlama didi di Reish Lakish says, mishumachi miyata dei rachmano. Why did the Torah exclude these fats? Because it's teaching you that they're not fats. That's why I took them out, to tell you these aren't real fats. Al didach likarev. According to you, why don't they go on the mizbeach? If they're really fat and they're really considered to be chelav beima, then they shouldn't have gone on the mizbeach. Sometimes there are animals that are full-fledged animals that have everything intact, and yet you're not allowed to put them on the mizbeach. For instance, mechusar zman, an animal in its first 7 days of life is not allowed to be put on the mizbeach as a korban. Is the animal kasher? Yes. Is the animal good for a korban? Yes. There's just a lack of time, meaning that you need to wait the 7 days. The Torah says in the first 7 days, you can't put it on as a korban. That's a gzeirat hakatum, that even though it's a full-fledged bema, kosher korban, the fats are considered to be chelev. You can't put it on the mizbeach because it's just missing the time threshold. He says the same thing over here, by the fats. Yes, the fats are considered to be chelev, but the Torah tells you that chelev doesn't go on the mizbeach. It's not telling you that it's not chelev. It is chelev. Just the Torah says, zeret ha-katuv, it doesn't go on the mizbeach. Just like by mechusar zman, it doesn't go on the mizbeach, even though the fats are considered to be chelev. Amar Rabbi Yami, ha-shochet et ha-treifa. If you shef the treifa, umatza ba-bentet chai, and then you find inside of it a live fetus that's come to full term. The divrei ha-oser matir, according to one who is normally oser, over here, they would be matir. The divya matir, the ones who normally are matir, over here, they would be oser. What they're speaking about is machloket chachamim and Rabbi Meir. In the Mishnah, Rabbi Meir says the shkita of the mother is unsuccessful of being matir the fetus when it's a live fetus that's reached full term. Because it's already considered to be a separate entity. And the shkita of the mother does not help the fetus. Given that, in a situation where the mother is found to be a treifa in the shkita, so the fetus needs a shkita. No problem. According to Rabbi Meir, it needed a shkita. You were chayav in shkita. And therefore, if you shef the fetus, you're going to get a kosher animal now that you can eat, because it was independent of the mother, and the shechita of the mother had no bearing on this fetus. Then for the chachamim who say that the shechita of the mother is successful of being matir the fetus, then in this case you have a problem, because the mother's shechita was the shechita of a treifa, which is good enough to get rid of the tumah from the animal, but it's not good enough to make it mutar ba'achila. So the mother's failed shechita is also a failed shechita for the fetus itself. And given that, for the chachamim, if you go now and check the fetus, you haven't done anything. We'll see the formulation of that a little later on in today's daf. But basically, you're doing nothing because the animal doesn't require shechita. It doesn't require shechita. You're shechting it. Isn't going to change anything over here. And therefore, for the chachamim, it's going to be asur. You had a shechita of the mother, which was a failed shechita. It was good enough to get rid of tumah. Wasn't good enough to make it muteret v'achila because the mother was a treifa. And therefore, it's also not going to be successful at making the fetus mutar ba'achila. That's the view of Rabbi Yami. And seemingly, based on what the Gemara is saying here, it's only true by Ben Tet Chai. This machloket Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim only applies by Ben Tet Chai, and therefore, the reversal of their opinions in this situation will be true in a Ben Tet Chai. Implying that in other situations where either you have a Chai, but it's less than that term, or you have a mate, where even Rabbi Meir agrees the Shechita of the mother would be impactful and successful for the fetus, then in that case, everybody would agree that it is a sur, because the shechita of the mother was unsuccessful at making it muteret b'achila, and the fetus does not have a shechita that helps it, and even Rabbi Meir in that case agrees another shechita is not going to help you over here, because the animal does not need a shechita. Rav Amar, Robo disagrees, and says, Divrei amatir nami mutar. Even according to the Chachamim, who are matir, the shechita of the fetus by the mother, they would be matir as well. Daldit simanim akshar bei rachmana. The Torah gave you the option to shecht it in four different simanim, which means that the Torah says by a fetus, either the shechita of the mother, the simanim of the mother, will help it, or its own simanim will help it. You need one of the two. I mean, out of the four simanim possible, you got to get two of them cut, whether it's the mother's two or the fetus's two, it will work. Over here, where you shechted the mother and it was a failed shechita, then you still have the option to use the simanim of the fetus and to shecht the fetus itself and have it be mutar ba'achila. So that's the view of Rava. According to Rava, that could open the possibility of doing one siman on the mother and one siman on the fetus, and maybe that would be good enough because the four simanim are made available to you. You could argue that Rava's saying is that you got to pick. It can't be a mix and a match. It's either the mother or the fetus, but not a mixture of both of them. So that's a possibility. Now, Tosafot points out over here, even though we had a machloket and a question about Dalit Simanim before in yesterday's daf, Tosafot goes out his way to show you how these machlokot are actually separate. So Tosafot makes one point, which is Rabbi Yami's position that the Chachamim or Matir, the fetus, by the Shechita of the mother, over here they say that the Shechita of the fetus has no bearing. That's because you already shechted the mother. And the mother's shechita had some success, which was it was successful at removing the shame nevela from it. It made it into a treifa instead of a nevela. That half success leaves you with a fetus that can't be shechted. But in a situation where the mother wasn't shechted at all, for instance, the mother was ripped open and you find a live fetus inside of it, and the mother was never shechted, in that situation, even the chachamim, according to Biyami, will agree that the shechita of the fetus will be successful, because nothing happened to the mother. You didn't do anything to the mother. That then would have been matir the fetus. The mother died. The mother didn't have a shechita done to it, so it doesn't in any way degrade the option of doing shechita on the fetus. According to Yami, even the chachamim in that situation agree you can check the fetus. And also what we said in yesterday's daf, you stick your hand into the animal and you shecht it. Over there we asked whether that is a successful shechita. Do we say that according to Rabbanan, that's no good because the mother is the access to the shechita? Or do we say maybe there's dalit simanim, akshar bei rachmana, the same terminology that Rabbanan is using here, but using the yesterday's daf. But the Baal Tosfos would say that is still not the same question over here, because even according to Rabbanan over here, who says that there are four simanim, and if the mother's shechita fails, you can do a shechita on the ubar, over there in the Gemara Ayin Dalit Amun Aleph, he might have agreed that there aren't dalit simanim over there, because over there, you're shechting it internal in the mother. Maybe the failure over there is not that there are no simanim to the fetus. If the fetus was born or taken out, it would have independent simanim. Problem there is it's still in utero, it's still in the mother. And over there, maybe Rava would agree that there is no dalit simanim until it exits the mother. So So he doesn't have to agree. Just because he says Dalet Simanim here doesn't mean you have to say Dalet Simanim there. And the similar thing the other way around. That here it's a treifa, and maybe that's worse than the situation in which you're trying to shech in utero. In addition, we just had the machlokes between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shlokish, that when you pull off fat from a bent ed chai, they also can fit into that question before, because again, over there, you're dealing with two different issues. One is dealing with what's the status of the fetus, the other one is dealing with what's your ability to do shechita in utero. Even if you believe that you take off the fats of the animal from in utero, it's considered to be the fats of a behema, that doesn't mean that doing shechita in utero is a successful shechita. So Tosafot goes out of his way to point out that each one of these questions is an independent question, and the solution to any one of them will not provide a solution to the other, because you can't differentiate between these questions. So Amar Rav Chisda, Shechita Treifa Matzah Ben Tzad Chai, Ta'on Shechita, then the animal requires Shechita, V'chayav Bizro Lechayim V'akeba, and you have to give the Matnot Kuhuna that are associated with a Behemat Chulin in that case. The mate, if it was dead, Tahor Militamei B'Masa, then it is also Nitar Ayudei the Shechita of the mother. So what Rav Chisda says is that the Shechita of the mother is efficacious at freeing the fetus from Tumat Nevela. But the Shechita of the mother is unsuccessful at freeing the fetus from its status of being a Surba Achila, and therefore you have to give the fetus a separate Shechita or an independent Shechita. So Amalei Robo, this does present some problem that it's Robo over here, and you can see there's an alternate gears of Rabo, and that might answer the Tosafot's question, which we'll point out in a second. But we'll read it with Amalei Rava, because that's clearly what the Girsa of the Bali Tosafot was. Don't Shechita. The fact that you require it to have Shechita, Ben Tzad Chai, is Kiman to Rabbi Meir. That's like Rabbi Meir. You're assuming like Rabbi Meir, that if Ben Tzad Chai, the Shechita of the mother, is not successful at freeing the fetus from anything, and therefore you're holding like Rabbi Meir. But the fact that you require it to have a separate Shechita now, and the fact that you say that it has Zro L'chaim and Keba are given from it means that there was a requirement for Shechita and you need to shecht it when it comes out. That means both that the Shechita of the mother wasn't effective at locking it out from having its own Shechita, number one. And number two is the fact that Shechita is effective on it or necessary for it is a Shechita of Rabbi Meir. So that part of your statement sounds like Rabbi Meir. Bimei tahor miletamei b'masa, the fact that you say that if it dies without Shechita, it doesn't have Tumat Nevela, means that the Shechita, the mother, was successful at removing Shem Nevela from that fetus. Come on, who's that like? That's like the Rabbonah. So your position seems to be inconsistent. Part of your position seems to be like Rabbi Meir, and the other part of your position seems to be like the Rabbonah. He says, Ule Tameich, according to your reasoning, this is what Rav Chisda says to Rava, Ha Detani Rabbi Chia. The bright thought that Rabbi Chia has, Hashochet et ha-treifa, Umatzaba ben Tzad Chai, Ta'un Shechita, V'chayep Yisrael L'chaim Rekiba, V'imeit, Tahor V'letamei B'matza. It's exactly what Rav Chisda said. We have a bright thought of Rabbi Chia that says exactly the same thing. And Rashi over here says that this bright thought of Rabbi Chia is the Tosefta. That's what it means, Tani Rabbi Chia. Tani Rabbi Chia means we have a bright thought. And the bright thought says the exact same thing that Rav Chisda said. So Rav Chisda says to Rava, what are you bothered about what I'm saying? It's an explicit braita that says it. And if it's explicit braita, how are you going to deal with the braita? The same way you deal with that braita, you're going to deal with what I said over here. Now Tosafot already says, Tema, came into Shmuel a braita, lema braita. If Rav Chisda knew about this braita, why does he quote the whole thing in his own name and not say there is a braita that says? He should have just brought the braita down. Why is he quoting in his own name a statement which he knows is a braita? He should just quote it as a braita. So over here you can see in the Masorah Shas, he brings down that the Girsa the Rashba b'shem Rabbeinu Chananel, that the Rashba in the name of the Rabbeinu Chananel says ha beheima. It does not say ha treifa that was shechted, but rather ha shechetet ha beheima. And obviously that would solve the problem because you'd be speaking about a beheima, not a treifa, and that's not the same statement as Rav Chisda. And given that it's not the same statement, that's why Rav Chisda didn't quote it as a braita. So the Rashba's Girsa would have solved that problem of the Bali Tosafot, although then you have to explain the Gemara slightly differently, which the Rashba and the Ramban, using their Rabbeinu Chananel's Girsa, actually learned the Gemara, explained the Gemara differently in order to fit that Girsa. According to the girsa that we have, that it's a shocheta de treifa, then it's a little strange that Rav Chisda didn't bring the brayta and brought his own memra. There are other people who have a girsa of not the tani Rabbi Chiya, but rather the tani lifnei Rabbi Chiya, which means that it wasn't a brayta of Rabbi Chiya, it wasn't a tosefta, rather tani lifnei Rabbi Chiya means that these were statements that were brought in front of Rabbi Chiya, not that it is actually a brayta. So that would be another way to solve that problem of the Balei HaTosafot. So Rav Chisda then says about the brayta, according to you, Rava, the fact on shkita, the fact that it requires shkita is kiman is like Rabbi Meir. Vimate tormi to maybe masah, that sounds like the Rabbanon. So Rava says back to Rav Chisda, alokasha, that's not a problem. Rav Chiya in kvar matsu mate kamar. So when it says in the brayta imate tahor, it doesn't mean if it died after it was born that it is tahor. Imate means im kvar mate. If it was already dead inside of the mother, because there even Rabbi Meir agrees that if you have a fetus that is dead inside, the shechita of the mother is successful at being matzirit or metaheret. And so therefore the whole brayta is according to Rabbi Meir now. The first part that requires shechita separately, when it is alive, that's like Rabbi Meir. If it's dead and it's tahor, that's also like Rabbi Meir, because a dead fetus, according to Rabbi Meir, the shechita of the mother is effective. So here we have a shechita mitreifa, it will be mitaheret, midei nevela. So that's the way to explain it. That's how I dealt with the brayta. So Rava says, I can answer the brayta. Eladidach kasha. But Rava says, you didn't answer that. You didn't answer that way for me. You didn't tell me in kvar mate. You said imate, meaning afterwards. And you didn't answer like I'm answering for the brayta. So the brayta I can answer. But I can't explain your position, Rav Chisda. So Amarle, so Rav Chisda says back to Rava, Ladidin amilo kasha. According to me, it's also not a question. Even according to the sheet of the Chachamim, Dalit simanim akshe bei rachmono. The Torah gave four simanim for the fetus. That means that either the simanim of the mother can be matir the fetus, or the simanim of the fetus itself can be matir the fetus. So over here, where again, when you shechted the mother, she was a treifa, the shechita of the mother was not effective because it was a treifa. So now you have the option to go and use the simanim of the fetus in order to be matir the fetus. That the shechita here is only good enough to take away the tumah of treifa does not then obviate the possibility that you could then actually shech the fetus, because its two simanim are still considered or classified as independent despite the effectiveness of the mother's simanim in removing tumah treifa. The fetus still has its own two simanim, and you can shech those to make it mutar ba'achila. Now, if this is true, how come Rava know this answer? Rava, on the previous Amud, he disagreed with Rabbi Ami and said, the Dibri HaMater, Nami Mudar Dalit Simanim Akshay Bei Rachmona. Rava has the same Svara, the same Shita. So how come over there Rava has that answer, and over here he doesn't answer that for Rav Chisda, and Rav Chisda is the one who comes up with the answer? So there are different ways to deal with that, one of which is to say, after Rava heard of it from Rav Chisda, he held of it. And that's when he's speaking to Rabbi Ami, he says over what he heard from Rav Chisda, and he now accepted that view, that Dalit Simanim Akshay Bei Rachmono. That's one possibility. The other possibility is what I pointed out to you before, that the conversation here between Rav Chisda is not between Rav Chisda and Rava, but rather between Rav Chisda and Rabba. If that's the case, then it would be also explainable, because this part of the Gemara is speaking about Rabba. That part of the Gemara is speaking about Rava, and Rava, the Talmud of Rav Chisda, accepted the position of Rav Chisda, not the position of Rabba. So that would be a way to deal with it as well. All right. So now the Gemara says, Kisalik Rabbi Zeira, when Rabbi Zeira went up to Eretz Yisrael, Ashkache le Rav Asi, it's probably Rabbi Asi, because he's up in Eretz Yisrael, so it's a little likely Rabbi Asi, Yoti v'karmalei l'hai shmaitata, that he was saying over this memra, and obviously l'hai shmaitata is the memra that we said before with regards to the shechita of the mother, that's a treifa, and the ability to then shech the fetus, if it's a benti shachai, or if it's a mate, that it doesn't have tumat nevela. The girsa here, in all likelihood, is that when Rabbi Zeira went up to Eretz Yisrael, Ashkechei Rabbi Asi, not Le Rabbi Asi, he didn't find Rabbi Asi saying this over, but rather, Rabbi Asi found Rabbi Zeira saying over this memra. You can see that in Rashi, where it says, Ashkechei Rabbi Asi, Le Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Asi found Rabbi Zeira. So it wasn't Ashkechei Le Rabbi Asi that was saying it, but rather, Rabbi Asi found Rabbi Zeira saying that memra. Amarlei Yasher. He said that what you're saying, Rabbi Zeira, is Nachon, Dechein Amar Rabbi Yochanan. That Rabbi Yochanan agrees with you. So Rabbi Asi, who's a Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan, is saying to Rabbi Zeira when he's saying over this Memra that Rabbi Yochanan agrees with you, because Rabbi Ami is bringing that perspective of Rabbi Yochanan and saying that you, Rabbi Zeira, who came from Bavel now and teaching this in Eretz Yisrael, you are saying the right thing, because here in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Yochanan also agrees to that view that Dalit Simanim Achshavei Rachmono. Michlal, the Gemara says to him, the fact that you said B'chein Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Michlal de Poli Galei Rabbi Shimon Lokish. You're making it sound like this is only the view of Rabbi Yochanan, not the view of Reish Lokish. We don't find anywhere that Reish Lokish argues on this. So why is Rabbi Asi only saying it over the name of Rabbi Yochanan, rather than saying that Divrei Akol, that this is the din? So my answer is, Misha Hapishoile. Some say that he tarried, Vishotikle, and he was quiet. Yigadari Mishta Vishoti, that he was drinking Vishotikle, and he was silent. So what the Gemara is proposing is the reason that Rabbi Asi did not know the view of Reish Lakish is because of Reish Lakish's practice with regards to Rabbi Yochanan. That is, Rashi says that the minhag of Reish Lakish was that whenever Rabbi Yochanan said something, Reish Lakish would be silent. He would let Rabbi Yochanan finish whatever he was saying, and only after Rabbi Yochanan had finished totally what he was saying and giving all his explanation and reasoning, then Reish Lakish would question Rabbi Yochanan. And what happened was Rabbi Asi left in the interim. While Rabbi Yochanan was giving the explanation, or finishing up the explanation, he left. So he never knew whether Reish Lakish at the end actually said something or didn't say something. So he just didn't know if Reish Lakish agreed or disagreed, because he didn't stay long enough for what was the normal practice of Reish Lakish to argue would have been later. Or Reish Lakish was drinking at the time that Rabbi Yochanan was speaking, and therefore he couldn't respond to Rabbi Yochanan because he was in the middle of a drink. And then Rabbi Asi exited, and he doesn't know after Reish Lakish was finished drinking, did he say something to Rabbi Yochanan or disappear to Rabbi Yochanan? That's why he didn't know. The other view that's brought by the Rabbeinu Chananel is that Misha Habashoi law means that he was tired and that he was worn down. Reish Lakish was tired on that day, and therefore when he was silent, Rabbi Asi wasn't sure if his silence was acquiescence or his silence was just because he was too tired to argue on that day. Therefore he didn't know what the position of Reish Lakish was. But for any one of those reasons, Rabbi Asi was not aware of Reish Lakish's position, but not to say that he necessarily disagreed with Rabbi Yochanan, he just didn't know. And since he didn't know, he quoted the name of Rabbi Yochanan, he knew for sure, had this opinion. Right now, the Gemara moves on to the latter part of our Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon Shazuri Omer, afilu, even if the animal's walking around, you can eat it as a ben bakua, it does not require shchita. So Gemara says, hainu tanakama. That sounds like the Tanakama. Chamim omrim, that the shchita of its mother is mitayeret. So what did Rabbi Shimon Zuri say that the Chamim didn't say? The Chamim said that the shchita of the mother is efficacious for the fetus. And Rabbi Shimon Shazuri says exactly the same thing. Even if it's walking around plowing fields, the mother's shchita helped it. He didn't seem to be adding anything. He doesn't seem to be saying anything different than the Chachamim. Amar Rav Kahana, so Rav Kahana says, Hifris al gabi akaroka ika benayu. Rashi says that if it's a model parsotaf, it's standing up on its feet, or that it actually walked a little bit, not that it just stood up. That's the nafkamina between them. But that's what Rav Chana says the difference between them is. Because the Chachamim believe that the ben pakua is only protected by the shechita of the mother when it still is not really exhibiting behaviors of an independent entity. When it's still lying on the ground, when it's unable to stand, it's unable to walk, then it's the shechita of the mother is successful at being matir the animal. But if it already walks around, then you have a problem midrabanan. Midoraita is mutar, and the shechita of the mother help. But there's a marat ayin aspect here. You have an animal that's walking around, you're going to eat it without shechita, that's a serious marat ayin. And people are not going to know that it's a ben pakua, and therefore midrabanan, they require a shechita. As Rav Shimon Shazuri says, you don't need a shechita. This is a ben pakua. Ben pakua doesn't need shechita. That's the ikar adin. Amar Rav Misharshia, the Divrei Omer Choshishim Lezera'av, according to the one who says that the father's contribution to the fetus is meaningful, ben pakua bal behema malioto, if you have a crossbreed between a ben pakua and a father who is a regular behema, or vice versa, a blood ain't no takana. The blood that is born from that union of a one regular behema and one ben pakua, that union will produce a fetus that cannot be eaten. Now, we're ready to learn this back on Daf Samachtet. Rashi over here explains why ein lo takana. Rashi only brings one of the two reasons he brought back on Samachtet Amad Aleph. Rashi says, "Arehi k'mayish ein lo elo siman echad." This animal is made up of a contribution from the mother and the father. The mother is a ben pakua, or a bat pakua, and therefore she does not require shechita. The father is a regular animal and does require shechita. So each one of them contributed to half over here. And what Rashi says is that one siman is considered as if shechted, that's a contribution from the mother. One siman needs shechte, and that is the contribution of the father. It only has one siman, because from the position of the mother, we view it as if the simanim were already shechted. And you have a problem now. You only have one siman shechted, and you need to shecht two simanim in order to be matir the behema. So if you shecht the other siman, you're only shechting one siman. No behemas nitar de one siman. So what are you going to tell me? Okay, you did shecht two simanim. The contribution of the mother was shechted when it was in utero in its mother. So that shechita already shechted the first siman. Now you're shechting the second siman. Now you have two simanim shechted. It should work. Rashi says, Ein lecha shi'ah gedola mizo. We know that one of the psulim by shechita is shi'ah, tearing or delaying in the shechting of the behema. And Rashi says the amount of time that elapsed from the shechita of the first siman to the second siman is so significant that it doesn't really matter. You can't combine those two shechitot. And therefore this behema has no way to be fixed. And then Rashi goes on to say, but lately the Rav Misharshia, ha damran leo. Rav Misharshia does not hold of what we just said, dalit simanim achshei bei rachmana, that the Torah was machshir dalit simanim, which means that you have an option. You have an option to use the mother's simanim, or you have an option to use the fetus's simanim. So you could have said the same thing over here, which is that you have the option to use the mother. The mother was about pekuah, so you can't use her simanim. So now just use the simanim of the fetus. So Rashi says Rav Misharshia can't hold of that position, because he's telling you that the next generation animal born to these animals doesn't have any takana, because it doesn't have any independence in terms of its shechita. And given that, there's no way to be mitakein the animal. So Rashi says two things here, one of which is that you have one siman that is shechted, one that is not shechted, and shechting that second siman is not going to help you over here. Number one, because the shechting of a single siman is never matir ve'ema. And if you think you can combine it with the previous siman, you had a shia between them, and it doesn't work. Number two is that the animal does not have independence in any way to have its own simanim take care of it, versus the simanim of the parents' influence over it. And therefore, he doesn't hold like the Gemara here, whether it was Rav or Rav Chista, or the Gemara yesterday, that say that there's a possibility that there are dalit simanim over here. Rashi back on Samach Tet Amud Aleph gave two reasons as to why this baby has no takana. Either the simanav einam simanim, dahalad palge kishkutim domo, because half of them are as if shechted already. Sounds like what he just said over here, that one of the simanim is already considered shechted. Therefore, shechting the second siman is not going to help you. Inami havelei bar siman echad. Or the other possibility is the animal only has one siman now. It doesn't have two simanim, it only has one siman. Over here in the Gemara here, Rashi seems to combine the two reasons and say that both are true, but it happens to be back there, he gives two reasons. Either the possibility that the animal only has one siman, or the other possibility is that one siman is already deemed shechted. So shechting the second siman is not going to be efficacious over here, because you already have one siman that is shechted. Tosafot disagrees with Rashi on a number of levels, but one of which is, he's upset about the fact that Rav Misharshia can't hold like any of the Gemaras before about Dalit Simanim. We don't see the Gemara saying that, and why should it be that way? He says, "Val kol mi gum gam," and everything that Rashi is saying here, it doesn't make sense. Even if the animal could be nitar by one Siman, you could not be makshir this animal if you just checked that one Siman. The Tosafot says, Rashi thought the contribution of the mother and father, the mother gave one siman, the father gave the other siman. And one siman is as if shechted, the other one siman, it needs shechting. And that's your problem over here. That's what it says. How can you separate and say one siman belongs to the mother, one siman belongs to the father? Every siman has a mixture of father and mother in it. And that means every siman is a combination of shachut and ena shachut. And therefore the problem is here is that you can't shecht the robe of siman. Because half the siman belongs to the mother and half the siman belongs to the father.
So the part that belongs to the father you can shech, but the part that belongs to the mother is already shechut, and therefore there's no rova siman that you're shechting. So even if it was a siman echad, mater be'ema, I wouldn't help you over here, because of the fact that shechah is not effective here, because no siman has enough in it to be shechted. That's number one. Number two is, even according to one before that says that they are four simanim that are available, we'll agree with Misharshi over here. The reason that over there the four simanim work is because the mother shechita was not a good shechita, because she was a treifa. That's why the animal, you have the option to use its own two simanim. Over here, the mother shechita was efficacious, meaning that it was a good shechita, and the ben pakua, or the mother, whichever which one of them is the one that already was shechted out your day, their parents, that they are already considered shachut. And therefore, the shechita was a good shechita. When it's a good shechita, you don't have the option then to use the other simanim of the fetus. And that's why arba simanim are not a solution over here, because only when the tupa simanim of the parent fail, or not a good shechita, we offer you the option of the simanim of the fetus. But in the case where the mother's simanim are fully shechted and good, then we don't offer you the option to use the simanim of the fetus. And that's the problem here. The mother's simanim, who is Aibat Pakua, are already deemed to be shechted, and therefore her contribution to the animal is half shechut. The animal's half shechted. If the animal's half shechted, its own simanim aren't going to help you either, because the mother's shechita, or the mother's deemed shechita, is already effective, and therefore they're not available to you, the simanim of the offspring, because the offspring itself already is half shechut. And it's not that it has its own two simanim that can't be shechted over here. So Tosafot argues on Rashi on both points. First of all, he says that remember Sharshia and the Gemaras that say Dalet simanim can't be reconciled. And number two is, he says the problem here is not one siman versus two simanim. The problem here is that in every siman you have a 50-50 mix between the contribution of the mother and the father that makes it half shechut and half ena shechut, and then no simanim can be shechted over here. Amar Ravaya, kol modim, everybody agrees, bekalut ben pakua shemutar, that if you have an animal that has two unusual features, which is that you have a kalut, means that the hooves are not split, but it was born through a kosher animal, and it is a ben pakua, it's mutar. My taima, what's the reasoning? Kol milta ditzmiya midka dechira la inche. When something is so unusual, something that is so strange, people are going to remember it. So over here, if it was just a ben pakua, it seems like that wouldn't be sufficient for people to remember that fact, or that's not something that really gets out there. But over here, where the animal has another feature that is unusual, that it is not a split-hooved animal, that in and of itself is enough to trigger people's memories, and when they remember the unusual feature of being a kalut, associated with that, they'll also remember that it was a ben pakua, meaning it had both of these features. If that's the case, even the chachamim in the Mishnah would disagree with Rabbi Shimon Shizuri, would agree here that you don't need a shechita because there is no maratayin in this case. Ikedamre, some say, Amar Abaye, komodim bekalut ben kaluta ben pakua shemutar, that if you have a kalut, which is a child of a kluta ben pakua, that was the child of a mother that also didn't have split hooves and was a bat pakua, then that's enough to then say that the Chachamim will agree with Shimon Shizuri to say that you don't require a shechita over here. My taima, trade to me a midkar dechirei inche. When you have two unusual events, then people remember it. Meaning the fact that the mother and the child were klutot is a double unusual thing. And when they remember that double unusual thing, they'll also remember that the offspring was from a ben pakua or a bat pakua. And that's enough then to not require shechita in that case. Rashi says that the mother was a bat pakua, who also happened to be kluta, and then that bat pakua died, was shechted, and then a ben pakua was found inside of her that was kalut. And therefore it's now two generations of this unusualness, which is that they were both a bat pakua and a ben pakua because they were both found inside of their parent that was shechted. And they both have the feature of kalut and kluta, and that's the unusual feature over here. So according to Rashi, the animal itself is a ben pakua. It itself is a ben pakua, not just because its mother was a bat pakua, and that together with the fact that the mother had that unusual feature, and it has that unusual feature, everybody will remember it. The other Rishonim, as you can see in the Masorah Shas, say
that there are actually three generations over here. There is the animal that is the pakua. Then there is the daughter of that animal that happens to be kluta. And then there is the granddaughter or grandson of that pakua that is also kalut. And therefore you have a pakua that has a child and a grandchild that have these unusual features. So there are two unusual features, plus the fact that original was a pakua. That's enough to have this be remembered by people as being something really unusual. Now this is all according to the Girsa of Rashi that says, Hachikar Sinan is Ikedamre, which is what we have in our Gemara. But many of the Rishonim didn't have the Girsa of Ikedamre, they had a Girsa of the Amar Abaye. And the Amar Abaye is coming to then modify the statement of Rabbi Yochanan. The first statement is that a Ben Pakua itself could have the din of not needing shechting, even according to the Rabbonan. The second din is an offspring of the Ben Pakua could also not require shechting, even according to Rabbi Yochanan, who says that it's only applicable to the first generation, according to Rabbi Shimon Zuri, not to the second generation. Over here you have instances where the Abaye is saying is that a second generation also may not require shechita in this case, and therefore you would have actually two options according to Abaye where the Chachamim would agree to Rabbi Shimon Zuri. Obviously that has nafkamino the halacha. According to Rashi, the second version of Abaye argues on the first version, and only with two simanim will it work, not with one siman, whereas according to the view of the other Rishonim, you have two different dinim here. One is that one siman is enough by the pakua itself, and then by the child of that, two simanim would then suffice in that situation. So now, Amar Ziri, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Alocha Rabbi Shimon Shizuri. So now we have a Mesorah from Ziri in the name of Rabbi Chanina, but the Alocha is like Rabbi Shimon Shizuri. Chanayah Rabbi Shimon Shizuri Matir, Bibino, Uben Bino, Atzov Koladorot. And Rabbi Shimon Shizuri is not only Matir, the animal itself that is a ben or bat pakua, any of its offspring afterwards would also be mutar as a ben pakua, assuming that it females that are born all along and the female is considered to be the only contributor over here, that you could have many generations of offsprings of ben pakua that would be all be mutar and you don't have to shech them and you can eat them without any shechita. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, hu mutar ubno asur. That animal is mutar, but the offspring of that animal is not mutar. That's because the animal itself is memorable as being a ben or bat pakua. The offspring of that animal, nobody's going to connect it back to the original shechita of the mother that was two generations ago. Ada bar chavu, avale ben pakua. So Ada bar chavu had a situation of a ben pakua. The nafal duba ale, that a bear attacked it. Now there's a question about the girsa whether it's duba. According to Rashi, it seems like it was a ze'eb. It was a wolf that attacked it and made it into a treifa, meaning that it was dores, this animal. So this ben pakua was nidras, ayudei, a wild animal, and now it's lying there. It's not dead yet, but it's going to die. After the coming to Ravashi, he went to ask Ravashi what to do. Amalei, zil shachte. Go shechte quickly. Amalei. He says to him, why do I need to shechte? Amar ziri, amar chanina, halach grab shimin shizuri. The halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Shizuri that even an animal that is older, you don't require shechita for it if it is a ben pakua. Rabbi Shimon Shizuri matir bibino ben bino atzov kol adorot. Rabbi Shimon Shizuri is not only matir for an animal that's older, even for offspring of the animal, he is matir. Vafilo Rabbi Yochanan, and even Rabbi Yochanan argues on that point of it, lo kamar el bino. He only says the offspring is problematic, but he lo. But it itself, Rabbi Yochanan is matir over here. So both according to Rabbi Yochanan and according to Rabbi Chanina, the animal itself, the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Shizuri, which means no matter how old the animal is, you don't require a shechita. So Rabbi Asher, you telling me to shech this animal over here. So Malay, so Rabbi Asher responds to him, Yochanan the divrei Rabbi Shimon Shizuri kamar. Rabbi Yochanan, when he was saying that, he was just explaining Rabbi Shimon Shizuri, doesn't mean he holds the Rabbi Shimon Shizuri. Which means that Rabbi Yochanan is saying that even Rabbi Shimon Shizuri himself only believes that the first generation, the Ben Pakua itself, doesn't require Shechita. But subsequent generations do require Shechita because of Maradayin, like the Chachamim think for the first generation. And therefore, he was just explaining Rabbi Shimon Shizuri. He's not saying the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Shizuri, meaning that the halacha is like the Chachamim. If the halacha is like the Chachamim, then you do require Shechita. Now, even although over here, if you pass on like the Rabbanan and do require Shechita, the Shechita is only a necessity because of Maradayin. The animal doesn't really require Shechita.
And that's why, even though the animal over here is a treifa, because it was attacked by a bear, it was attacked by a wolf, and it has a status of a drusa, and therefore it would be a treifa. Nevertheless, the shechita is enough, because it ben pakua doesn't have a din in treifa. So the treifa really don't matter. It doesn't require shechita either. Marat ayin, we make him do shechita. And what Tosfos points out, that there's a difference. The fact that you don't have to shech the animal at all, that's something that people on the outside would see and say, whoa, how are you eating this animal without shechita? The fact that he shechted the animal, and it happens to be a treifa as well, people are less attuned to that, are less clued in to the fact that it was a treifa. They have no idea whether it was or wasn't the treifa. Therefore, the shechita will be successful over here, get rid of marat ayin. Treifa we don't worry about, because the treifot are not something that people know about, and therefore we don't have to worry about marat ayin with regards to them. That's one way to explain it. The other way to just to say it is that a ben pakua nidrasa is such a rare case that the chachamim weren't gozer in that case not to shecht it, and you can shecht it based on their marat ayin zera or takana, but you don't have to worry about the treifa. Or the other possibility is Rav Ashi was telling him shecht it and check if it is a treifa. He's not saying necessarily that this overcomes the problem of treifa. Might be that you have to check it and find out if it's a treifa, but at least shecht it, because that's the din, it's like the chachamim. V'amar Ravin bar Chanina amar ulo amar Rabbi Chanina halacha ka Rabbi Shimon Shizuri. Here we have another member from Amoraim saying halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Shizuri. The bringing over here doesn't seem to be additive at all, because it's quoted from Rabbi Chanina. That means that the source again in both instances is Rabbi Chanina saying halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Shizuri. It's the next part that's happening. Below Ode El kol makom shushana Rabbi Shimon Shizuri. The Girsa Mishnah Teinu probably taken out, because the other places in Shas, the Gemara and the Rishonim seem to indicate the halachas like Rabbi Shimon Shizuri anywhere in any Tanaic work, not just in Mishnayot. Malkum Shishan Rabbi Shimon Shizuri, halacha kimoto. That's the reason we brought it over here. We brought it over here to tell you that not only does Rabbi Chanina say halachas like Rabbi Shimon Shizuri here, he thinks rather halachas like Rabbi Shimon Shizuri everywhere. He's mentioned in the Mishnayot, Braitot, any Tanaic work. Samarlei, so Rav Ashi says back to him, Ana kehasvirle. I hold like this. Tamar Rabbi Yonatan, over here it's likely not Rabbi Yonatan, but rather either Rabbi Natan or Rabbi Yochanan. Halacha ke Rabbi Shimon Shizuri. That the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Shizuri in Misukan, uve trumat maser shel demai. Which means that only in two places in Shas, Mishnayot, is the halacha like Rabbi Shimon Shizuri. Nowhere else is the halacha like him. So he has a different Masorah. The Masorah from Rabbi Yochanan or Rabbi Natan is that the halacha is only like him in these two instances. Everywhere else, it's not like him. This is one of the anywhere else. There, the halacha is like the Chachamim over here, as opposed to the Masorah that we have from Rabbi Chanina, that the halacha is like Shimon Shizuri over here, and anywhere he's mentioned in the Mishnayot. And Tosfos points out that we paskin like this view of Rav Ashi, that brings that Rabbi Yochanan said that only in these two locations, the halacha like Rabbi Shimon Shizuri, because number one, over here you have a psak halacha from Rav Ashi, as well as halacha the Maisa, which shows you that he held of the Rabbanan and not of Rabbi Shimon Shizuri. And the fact that in Bamei Malikin, Rabbi Shimon Shizuri has a dissenting opinion as to what oils you can use. And the fact that we on Shabbat use any oil is also evidence of the fact that we don't paskin like Rabbi Shimon Shizuri outside of these two instances. What are those two cases? Misukan. Misukan is the Mishnah in Gitin. Ditznan. Beruchonah Yomrim. In the beginning he used to say, I would say, Bekolar. Someone is being taken out in chains to be executed by the government. Vamar. And he says to them, Kitvu get the Ishti. Write a get for my wife. But he didn't say to them, give it to her. He only told them to write it. He didn't say to give it to her. Harelu yichtivu v'yitnu. They should write it and give it. The reason he didn't say to give it is that he's bogged down. He's worried about his execution and all that. He's not thinking. He told him to write it. We say that he really meant to say, write it and give it. He just didn't have the wherewithal, or he wasn't of a sound state now to do that. Chazru lomar, then they also said, Af ha-mifaresh, ve-yotzei b'shairah. So too, someone is about to go out to sea on a voyage, or someone is going out in a caravan through the deserted areas, uninhabited areas, also there. If he says, write a get for my wife, he means write it and give it. We assume that's what he meant, and therefore they were appointed as shlichim, and they can give his wife the get, and it'll be a good get. Shimon Shizuri Omer, Afa Misukan. We add on top of that, even someone who is in danger. Whether that means, Mitoch Chol Yo, as Rashi says, because of sickness, or Misukan because the government is chasing him down. He has some worry that he has to escape down because he's worried that also could be Misukan. But anything where there's some sort of life threat to him in those situations as well, we'll say when he says they should write the get, it means write the get and give it. And it's as if they were appointed as shlichim to write it and to give it to his wife, and they can give it and it'll be a good get. The other case is Trumat Maser Shel Demai. That's not. We have the Mishnah in Demai that says Trumat Maser Shel Demai Shechazra L'Mekoma. If you have Demai, which is the produce of Eid Am Haaretz, but you don't know if he took off Shumot and Masrot from it, and we are suspect, even if you ask him, we question whether he's going to tell the truth over here because he wants to say yes so that the person buys it. So he has a vested interest in saying yes here. So we don't know if he has Nemanut in this case as well. So what we do is we take off Trumot and Masrot Misafek. And that means that Truma Gedola we don't worry about. Because Truma Gedola, you can take one little piece of anything and that's already Truma Gedola. So the Am Haaretz definitely did it. And we have a Chazoka that the Am Haaretz were taking off Trumot and Masrot. That's the Chazoka of Yochanan Kohen Gadol who sent out through all of Klai Yisrael, and they did a survey. And they figured out that most people were taking out Trumot and Masrot. Now, even though it was a majority, it was just a majority, not a super majority. That means that 51% of them were doing it, or even 60% of them were doing it. That means that there's a significant minority that are not taking off Trumot and Masrot. And therefore, because of that safek, we make you take off additional Trumot and Masrot. Again, Trumat Gedola you don't have to take off. Maaser Rishon you separate, and then separate away from it Trumat Maaser. That's something that's a chiyuv mita b'dei shamayim associated with it. You separate out the trumat maser, and then you give it to the kohen if you want, or sell it to the kohen, but you can't eat it because it is trumat maser, which has a chiyuv b'dei shamayim if it really is trumat maser. The maaser rishon is only a dinim mononot, and the levi is a motzi mechaber olav b'raya, so you can keep the maaser rishon. Similar with maaser ani, if you have to separate it off, you do it, but then there's no claimant to come and get it because the motzi mechaber olav b'raya, so it's also a dinim mononot, and you can keep it. Maaser sheni, you just be poder on coins, and then you'll eat it yourself up in Yerushalayim whenever you go to Yerushalayim. So that's how you deal with demai. In this instance, he separated out trumat maaser, and then it fell back into the mixture. What he took it away from, now it fell back into it. Now, when it falls back into it, as Rashi says over here, you don't have enough to be mevatel it. To be mevatel truma, you need 100 to 1. Over here, this is 1% of the mixture. When it falls back in, you have 99 to 1. And since it's 99 to 1, it's not batel over here. This is a machloket in shita as to whether you need 100 to 1 or 101 to 1 in order to be batel. Over here, Rashi makes it clear that 100 to 1 would have worked. Problem is that you only have 99 to 1 over here. So now it's a significant loss. You're about to lose 99% of this produce with truma that's in it, and then it has to all be given to the kohen to be eaten, or even if you can sell it, if you can sell that to make truma, which is much lower, and you're going to have to suffer significant loss. So here, Rabbi Shimon Ziri says, Omer af b'chol sho'alo b'chol apiv. Shimon Ziri says, even on a weekday, ask the Am Haaretz, take off truma to masrot, and you can believe him. In the makom hefsed gadol, we rely on the chazoka, as well as what the Am Haaretz says in order to be matirat. And the Yerushalmi says that the reasoning of Rabbi Shimon Shazuri is that emat dimua alav, that he knows the significance of dimua, truma, and chiyuv mitah b'dei shamayim, and he won't lie about such an issue. Now why it says af b'chol is because on Shabbat, we are matir, you'd ask the Am Haaretz, and he's believed on Shabbat. The Yerushalmi brings two possibilities as to why he's believed. He could be believed because of kavod or Shabbat. Because of Kavod Shabbat, we let you ask him and believe him in order to have this stuff to be eaten on Shabbat. So the Kavod Shabbat, we allowed you, we gave you a certain mehet there because of the chazaka that will take it. Based on that, plus his saying so, we allow you to eat it on Shabbat. The Motzei Shabbat, you can't eat it anymore. You'd have to take off Trumot and Masrot Demai from it. The other view is Emat HaShabbat Alav, which is that the Am Haaretz is fearful of Shabbat. On Shabbat, he won't lie, because either of his feeling that Shabbat is a day of importance, it's a day to God, and you don't lie on such a day, or he is aware of the significance of Shabbat being koveya for Trumot and Masrot, and therefore he won't lie about it. So you ask him, because Emat HaShabbat Alav, the fear of Shabbat is on him, and that fear makes him tell the truth. But here we say, Af B'chol, even on a weekday we allow you to ask him, because of the Hefsed Gadol over here. That does what deals with number of the nafkaminot, or differences between Emata Shabbat and Kabbalah Shabbat, having to explain why certain dinim apply or don't apply, including why on Motei Shabbat, because he did not believe, if the fear of Shabbat was on him when he told the truth on Shabbat, then why shouldn't that stay in place even after Shabbat? Because when he said it, we believe him, but we should believe him all the way along. Versus the one who says for Kavod Shabbat, I understand why on Motei Shabbat you can't eat it, because it's no longer for Kavod Shabbat. Therefore, you have to take off the Trumot HaMasorot Midamai once you get Motei Shabbat. Okay, we're going to stop here at the end of Ayin Hei Amud Bet.